And welcome once again to another edition of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are so happy to have you on board with us every week as we bring you the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on PRN.live. And you know, something I only found out about lately is you can go. If you have this kind of phone, it actually has a little square on it that says podcasts somewhere. I'm sure you all know what that means a lot more than I even do. I only found it recently. Someone was on an herb walk with me and we were identifying wild, edible, and medicinal plants. And they said, oh, you know, we always listen to your podcasts, both Herbally Yours and The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I said, really? How do you do that? And they showed me on their phone. Anywhere it says podcast, if you click on it, you can actually type in The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And this show on Progressive Radio Voices pops up. And by the way, Progressive Radio Voices has lots of shows that you can listen to. So apparently you can then put it in that you want to get it every week. And you know, we do have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of shows archived because Dr. Z and I have been doing radio shows long before there was any such thing as a podcast. And we still do. We actually do shows in the studio, real live radio. And then they're also put out on podcasts that you can apparently sign up for and get every week. And that's why we have so many thousands of listeners. The last time I looked, it looked like it was over 400,000 people that actually either listen live during the podcast or radio show, I'm not sure which to call it, and or visit anytime they want, which is, I think, really great. So if you miss it in the time we're actually on the air, you can connect anytime. So I want to tell you, first of all, how you get in touch with myself and Dr. Z. You just go to naturalnurse.com. We also are on Facebook, The Natural Nurse, Instagram, The Natural Nurse, Pinterest, and I don't know what else. But in any event, I really like the website the best because whatever you put on the website, it stays there until you change it. Well, I notice on Instagram, it's there and goes somewhere else. I don't know where. I'm not really into those things. But if you are, we have all of them. But if you go to naturalnurse.com, you can join our mailing list really easily right on the front page at the bottom. It says join mailing list. And all you have to put in is just your email. No other questions are asked. And then you have to go in your email and you'll get an email from Health Realizations, which is our publisher of our newsletter. And then you just have to accept it. And then you're on. Anytime you want off, you just click unsubscribe and you don't get it. We don't send out tons of newsletters. Those of you who are on a mailing list know, you know, maybe once a month, maybe less than once a month. We're not big on sending out a million newsletters. But you can also join us on Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and we do send more posts out through Facebook. Now, one thing that people love to join us for is our classes and events. So if you go to naturalnurse.com and go to classes and events, you can very easily sign up for our classes, which, by the way, offer CE units for nurses, massage therapists, registered dietitians, licensed nutritionists, acupuncturists, and other licensed people, because we are certified to give CEUs through the Florida State Department of Education. So if you're in another state, usually they're reciprocal. I send you a certificate of completion. Some of our classes have 3 CEUs, some have 18 CEUs, depending on the intensity of the topic. So we have one coming up really soon, which is called Olive and Oregano, From Ancient Mythology to Modern Scientific Scrutiny. You know, those two herbs, olive and oregano, have a very long and ancient history, both in mythology and science. And we're going to take a deep look at these two plant allies that have played significant roles throughout human history, the majestic giant olive tree and the small, soft oregano plant. Both of these are Mediterranean natives that are powerhouses for both flavor as spices and food. And in addition to their respective role in mythology and folklore, also as nutritional seasonings. And they also have a long litany of profound scientific substantiation for their antimicrobial and immune supportive benefits. So we're going to talk about not only recipes, but also specific actions at a cellular level of several of the active constituents of these plants, such as carvacrol, which exhibits antimicrobial activity related to hydrophobicity. Hydrophobicity is about, can water get in or is water pushed away? And the presence of a free hydroxyl group, in particular the phenol mighty, which actively supports pro-apoptotic processes. What does that mean? It means it breaks up cancer cells. So this is wonderful to understand. Just go to naturalnurse.com, classes and events, and you can sign up for that class if you'd like to join us. By the way, if the time that we're going to have it live, it's live, but it's virtual. In other words, we'll all be on the computer. If you miss it at that time, it doesn't matter, because then it's archived at Natural Nurse University, and then it's available basically any time that you want to take it. So, you know, it's still, you have access to it. We then have some more up and coming on ground classes, such as the Autumn Wild Edible and Herb Identification Walk at Restoration Farm, where we go out as a group and I point out to you many of the weeds, things that you think are weeds, which just means you don't yet know how to make it into food or medicine, but you will know if you come on our Wild Edible and Herb Identification Walk, and that's at Restoration Farm in Old Bethpage, New York. And then we have a full herb walk and medicine making workshop at Gilberti's Farm in Connecticut. That's coming up in September, where it's a long class, you know, whole day. We go out and gather wild edible and medicinals, as well as some that are grown in the garden there, the cultivated area. And then you make your own medicine and you go home with a salve, a tincture, an extract, things that you have made for yourself. We then have a class on herbs for eye health and electromagnetic field deflection, because how do you protect your eyes when we are so overusing our eyes now with, of course, computer screens and phone screens? But there are things that you can do, natural things that you'll learn about, such as blueberries and marigolds and lots of other herbs, and also eye exercises such as the Bates eye exercise. So we're going to talk about herbs for eye health and electromagnetic field deflection. That class is being sponsored by the American Herbalist Guild, and it is free. So I would suggest you sign up for it, and then if you want to join us, then you can. It is a totally free lecture in September. So go to naturalnurse.com to find out more. We'll then have an in-depth class on ear infections, what to do about them, what herbs, what homeopathics, and then we also have one on FDA, FTC regulations for herbal products. You need to know before you go. There is a class there for that, but I actually suggest you also think about talking to me personally if you're really planning to do herbal manufacturing of any kind, because there's a lot to know. You don't want to become pen pals with the FDA and the FTC. We also have our fall season Chinatown Herb Walk, where we're going and meeting in Chinatown, that's in Chinatown, Manhattan, and we spend the day learning about such things as tongue and pulse diagnosis, what kind of things to select in a Chinese herb shop, how to know you're getting the best quality, what is effective. So really a full day about Chinese medicine. It's like going to another country by exploring New York City's Chinatown. And then looking ahead to 2024, we have our next Echo Tours for Cures, the education vacation. And for that, we take a trip in March of 2024 to the island of Jamaica. And you can visit the link there for videos. You'll see the place we stay, the bush doctor healers that we work with. And that's actually a life transformative adventure that we've been doing. I think that'll be our maybe 40th year that we're taking people on all of these trips. So if you want someone really seasoned and knowledgeable in these kinds of adventures, please do check out naturalnurse.com and join us. We'd love to see you there. So with that, we're going to bring on board our guest. And our guest today is Jen Fry. She told me the right way to say it, which is fry like, she said fry like French fries. So our guest today is Jen Fry, and she's going to be joining us. And we're going to be talking about her beautiful new book called Communicating with Plants: Heart-Based Practices for Connecting with Plant Spirits. And of course, when we're doing all these outside herbal identification workshops, we are constantly communicating with plants. That's actually a big part of what we all do when we're working with plants, whether you want to or not. It's just the nature of the energetic fields that are associated between humans. And Jen Fry is a healer, mentor, and earth advocate with more than 20 years of experience with plant essences, energy work, and herbal practices. She is the founder of Bridget's Way and co-steward of Heart Springs Sanctuary. What a beautiful name. And she has dedicated her life to the spiritual path of plant work. Jen is located in Pennsylvania. And of course, her book is available anywhere. It's called Communicating with Plants. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jen.
Thanks for having me, Ellen. I'm happy to, always happy to talk about plants.
So I got your name right, Frey. Fry.
Absolutely, yes.
But it is spelled Frey if people are looking for you online or if people are trying to find your beautiful book, Communicating with Plants. And I actually have a copy of it. What's on the cover there? Is that actual land you go on?
No, it's actually inspired by my favorite trail. The cover was one of the most challenging parts to this book, more so than I think is typical. We weren't the base of it with the illustrations and the color, that was the original design and it was beautiful, but we weren't finding a picture to like make it pop. And finally, there's a trail that I just love that has first bluebells and then phlox that bloom all along it, and it's just so magical. So I sent them a picture of that, but then they found this one that's a little bit clearer. So
But it's reminiscent of that one you
it's
walk on.
completely
Similar.
right. It looks so much like it. It's amazing. And it's just, the trail that I walk for months in the spring, because it's really for spring ephemeral. So it's just like, I call it many acts. Like the first act is the Dutchman's breeches, and then comes the bluebells. And so you just feel like you're walking in a pure fairyland. It's just so magical.
Well, it's the same way here where I live. My summer location is Oyster Bay, New York. And we have, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of acres of trails and parks and places that have been untouched ever, for many thousands of years. And they're absolutely exquisite. And they do have, like you say, sort of an array of plants that come up in their season. So we have things that are like wild orchids and just all kinds of both edible and medicinal and absolutely gorgeous plants. And that's one reason, I would say the main reason why I come here for the summer, because I also hike every day here, but I don't do winter. And I never will see another snowflake as long as I live. I can't stand anything below 50 degrees. So then I go to Florida, and there's trails there too, and I enjoy them, and it's a completely different energy field, but I don't love it as much in terms of the plant communication as I do the Northeast plants, which is what keeps me coming back. So that's what I love about the look of your trail there. It's just beautiful. So what do you mean by communicating with plants?
Well, pretty much the same as I mean about communicating with you. You know, it's receiving messages from the plants and the plants guiding us along. Whatever questions we have, whatever needs we have, they can help answer them. So we, you know, people, how people communicate, it varies on the person, but we can receive messages in so many ways. There's no limit to it. And it's conscious. So, you know, sometimes people think about like, well, I talk to my plants all the time, and that's great. And science has proven that that helps them to grow, but we can also get answers back from them.
So when you say that, you have on the cover of your book, you have heart-based practices. What does heart-based practices mean?
Yeah, so what I say is that the basis of all good communication is that we're in our heart place. So I use heart center, heart coherence, heart intelligent, heart place all synonymously. And again, there's so much that backs this up that shows that our heart has its own intelligence, and it's actually the primary organ of perception, that the heart feels things, notices things first, and then tells the brain how to react. And so when we're in our heart intelligence, which unfortunately most of us are not in as we go about our lives, but when we can get into that heart place, it allows for smoother communications. It makes it easier to bond. It helps us to be more solution oriented, to see a broader perspective, to see all possibilities. And so, you know, I always say that when my plant communication classes are actually really good relationship classes, because that's the base of plant communication, is relationship. And so we all know those conversations that we have with people where we're each talking, but we're not hearing one another and we're not getting anywhere. And we just get more and more frustrated. And so when that's happening, it's because we're not in our heart. But hopefully we've all also had those conversations where you just feel like, oh, this is what life is all about, where you're just really connected and your body feels expansive and like you just feel the full potential and love of the world. And that's because you're in your heart and you're both relating to each other from your heart.
Well, you know, on a scientific note, I would just like to throw out that it's very interesting that when people get heart transplants, they actually exhibit a lot of things that were part of the donor. Right. And this has actually, there have been scientific studies on that. Like a man had a heart transplant and then he came home. He got better. He was doing well. And he said to his wife, honey, why don't we go to the mall? Like they've been married for, you know, 25 years. And she looked at him like, what? You know, he hated going to the mall. And she actually investigated it and found out that the donor loved going to the mall. You know, there's been a lot of things like that where you're going, where is that coming from? Some of the emotional essence really is attached physically in the heart center.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you have a beautiful illustration on page 32 in your just absolutely gorgeous book. Just looking through it is so beautiful. I love the picture of you and your grandpa.
Thank you.
But who drew this? I'm looking for like an author of the picture, but it's just beautiful. It's a heart surrounded by plants.
Yeah, it's so all of the illustrations are done by one of my students, Lillian Edwards. And she's just an incredible artist, obviously, who also is a huge plant lover and does this work. And so when I started writing the book, I knew I'd want some illustrations of the plants, and Lillian was my first choice. And it was such a magical experience to work with her, because we didn't talk. I would send her my my chapters, and she would journey with the plants, read the chapter, and then send me a drawing. And it was like, she captured the essence of all of the plants. And that plant communication one, she did all on her own. But I always thought too, I wanted a heart with all the plants, and I didn't tell her that. And that's what she created on her own. So it was, yeah, she's talented. She's in Nevada City, California, and I highly recommend people check her out, Lillian Edwards.
Right. It is gorgeous. So on that page, there's nothing on it saying, you know, Lillian Edwards anywhere, but I'm sure you reference that somewhere, like you say, illustrations by, because that would be great for someone to see that, because it's really interesting. Everyone should get a copy of this book, Communicating with Plants. I mean, this could be a poster. And what it is a picture of an anatomically correct heart, and then growing out of it, really out of the vessels, are beautiful plants. And every one of the plants is also extremely anatomically correct for each plant.
Yeah, so Lillian actually does have, I don't know if she has posters, but she has cards of all of the illustrations. And so you can find them at her website, which is earthprayer.love, which I can't think of a more beautiful name than that for a business. but I highly recommend people check out all of her illustrations.
So is she also an herbalist?
She's actually started studying herbs more recently, but she is a flower essence practitioner and plant spirit healer. So she does all of that work.
Well, I was really impressed with the illustrations in your book. Tell us about your connection, since you put a picture of yourself as a little girl. And my original teacher in terms of my herbal path was my grandmother. So that picture reminds me a lot of me following my grandmother around. And she had, by the way, 35 grandchildren. And we all lived together, actually, in this sort of cottage complex. She lived in the big house. She had 8 children. They lived in the little cottages, and then they all had children. On that generation was me. And we followed her around, but I really became her protege. And she was an herbalist and also a tea leaf reader from Greece.
Fabulous.
So that picture reminds me a lot of me working with my grandmother. Tell us about your story with your granddaddy.
Yeah. So both sets of my grandparents were really influential in my life. I spent a lot of time with them. We didn't live with them, but that would be fabulous. The picture in there is with my maternal grandfather, and he's probably the one that had the biggest influence. He was a Methodist minister, but his real love was gardening. And as a minister, he had to move around a lot. And it was always my grandmother's job to figure out how to move all of the stuff in the house. And my grandfather's main preoccupation was like, how are we going to move the compost pile and the greenhouse? And he did. He moved the compost with them every single time they moved. So he taught me from a very young age, of course, that we grow our own food. So did my maternal grandparents. But also that we ask permission before we harvest. We talked to our plants, and he always had music playing in the greenhouse. And then later in life, I inherited his Secret Life of Plants book. And my grandfather, by the time I read it, my grandfather, unfortunately, was too far in the late stages of dementia, so I couldn't talk to him about it. But I really think that he had this other side of him that communicated with plants, but I'm guessing he didn't have anybody to talk to about it. So he's the one that really, I always say I didn't have a choice, that I had to be a plant lover. he didn't do much with herbs. So I kind of followed the earth or the herb path on my own, but just as far as loving plants and honoring plants, and we have to be reverent and that they are intelligent beings, that definitely came from him.
Well, now that you brought up one of my favorite books, which is The Secret Life of Plants, and I teach an entire course just about that. And that was a really, really interesting description of the intersection between what might be considered a spiritual connection and heart-based practices and actually scientifically validated interaction, where what happened with plant communication was actually picked up on in a similar way that you would use a lie detector by Cleve Baxter, who's the person who developed the lie detector test from the polygraph machine. He actually, just as a little lark, decided to attach electrodes to a plant that lived in his office, and he thought he wouldn't get any kind of reading. And he saw there was a reading. And then he thought to himself, how could I challenge this plant? And he thought, what if I burned the leaf? But he did not have matches, so he went into his secretary's office, because she was a smoker in those days, which I clearly remember. Everybody smoked everywhere, even at the nurse's station when I was a young nurse. And he borrowed those matches and came back and burned the leaf. But what was amazing was the polygraph machine picked up a change in the activity from the plant, not only when he burned a leaf, but he was able to look back and when he thought about burning the leaf. That is amazing, and really made him focus his whole life about really communicating with plants.
Yeah, I really appreciate his work. I know some scientists have discredited him, but I also read his primary perceptions, where he explained that which I love this part of it so much, was that all of the science experiments that discredited him didn't follow his strict protocols, because he said the plants would adhere to a human so quickly that they would be able to tell if you were saying you're going to burn it, but you're not going to because you're normally the caregiver, they wouldn't respond.
You mean in terms of your intention?
Right. They had, so like the people that were growing the plants and even the people who brought the plants up to the lab couldn't be the people who were, you know, threatening to harm the plants or wanting to get the plants to react, because the plants had already connected to them sometimes within like just a minute or so and knew they weren't going to want to harm them. So they wouldn't react. So he was very strict, and who were the, you know, experimenters and who were the caregivers of the plants, whereas these other studies weren't. And I just think that to me is actually possibly the most profound part of the work that he was doing, just showing how sensitive plants are and how much they connect with us and they want to be in relationship with us, and how they can, you know, really, once they know who we are, that they can really read our intentions and react accordingly.
So there's so many things in here that are really beautiful in your book. What do you mean by, it's just some part of your book, and perhaps you would remember what you mean by this, because gardeners would wonder what you mean by this, when you say no such thing as invasive, and you were talking about Japanese hops.
Yeah, so that's one, you know, invasive plants is a big subject right now, and definitely a lot of native plant lovers, you know, plant lovers who will dedicate their entire lives, as you said, gardeners, but dedicate their entire lives to plants. And let's just face it, if you're a true gardener, you spend a fortune on plants and lots of time spent there. So that absolutely love plants will get really excited to rip out garlic mustard's a big one around here. And they don't think twice about, like, you know, we've got to rip out these plants, or let's just completely wipe them all out, destroy them, because they're considered invasives. And I've always had the opposite reaction. And the reason why I say there's no such thing as invasive is because I believe in the intelligence of nature. And so when a plant, first of all, plants are supposed to move around, and plants have always moved with humans. We've always brought them wherever we go, intentionally and unintentionally. But also, our Earth is constantly evolving, and we see it now that the Earth's evolving really quickly, possibly in ways that we would prefer wasn't happening. But the plants also, nature adjusts to that. It's always a matter of balance and trying to reach there. And so for the invasives, I feel like it's really our responsibility to figure out why they're there. rather than just wipe them out. Why are they there? What's the role that they're playing in the environment?
I think that's a great suggestion. Well, we're going to take a little break here, Jen, so that we can listen to our natural medicine chest. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with author Jen Frey. That's F-R-E-Y. And we're talking about her beautiful book. I mean, this book, it's something to have in your hands and look at. The illustrations are exquisite. The information is heart-opening, and it is called Communicating with Plants, Heart-Based Practices for Connecting with Plant Spirits. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us once again for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to have you on board. We love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com because right there, there's a click to send us an email and there's a phone number you can call, etc. to get in touch. We like to hear feedback from our hundreds of thousands of listeners, and we're so happy that you're out there downloading The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on your podcast app, and that way you get it every single week. And we also have another show called Herbally Yours, which focuses on herbs. And today we are happy to have as our guest Jen Frey. And Jen has a beautiful book called Communicating with Plants, Heart-Based Practices for Connecting with Plant Spirits. So, Jen, I have something to ask you about, still with the name of your book. We talked about the heart-based, and you did a great job explaining that to us. What about, why would you call it plant spirits instead of just connecting with plants?
Well, because as I said earlier, you know, plants are intelligent. And so they have their own form of intelligent being that we refer to as the plant spirit. So some people, when we're taking herbs, sometimes it only contains, the medicine only contains the medicinal, the physical properties of the plants, but we can actually enhance the herbs by also including the plant spirit and asking them to put their energy in. So there's another, it's a little hard to describe it, but there's another aspect of plants that is even bigger than just the physical properties or the physicality that we see of them. Just like there's more to you than just your body. You know, the plants also have a plant spirit, and that's really the intelligent aspect there. And the other part of this is when we develop that relationship with the plant, and we become really close with the plant spirit, we can communicate with them anywhere in the world. We don't have to be right in front of them. We don't have to be touching them. In fact, like last night, very bizarrely, I had a nightmare, which is not my typical thing. And I woke up with that like really intense feeling in my body. And so I immediately called on mugwort plant spirit to just help calm my body. Mugwort's really great at moving energy. So just please come calm my body, clean my room so I could get back to sleep. Whereas if I'm working with the plant mugwort, I would have had to go down, you know, have some tea or maybe spray something, but I can just work with the energy there because I have that relationship with the plant spirit.
That's true. And so you can call it forth even if you don't have the physical plant. But while you're talking about mugwort, what an intensely interesting plant. Like the name mugwort, what does that even mean? I always ask people when we're on a herb walk collecting it, because there's almost nowhere you can be that you can't collect it. Although not so much in Florida, not in Southern Florida. Whole different group of plants. But mugwort, what does that mean, even the name? It's about mug, meaning a cup, and wort, that name wort, W-O-R-T, is Old English for plant. So it's really about a plant that people often had in their cup. And it has a lot of healing potential in terms of being a vermifuge or helping to get rid of worms, as well as what you're talking about, which is a more spiritual connection. And then in Chinese acupuncture, they use mugwort as moxibustion. That's what's in those things. If anyone ever had acupuncture and they burned something and then put it on the acupuncture points, that smoke is from mugwort. Which is really interesting because I've seen that smoke, even if it's held above an area of the body, move in a, just like a little tornado, and go right into where the acupuncture point is. So it's like mugwort has a lot of intelligence.
Without a doubt.
Now, in your book, too, you talk about plants in terms of their relationship with, let's say, feelings. I love your discussion about willow and releasing grief.
Yeah, willow is such a special plant. I was actually just talking about willow yesterday with one of my clients. And so, you know, I think sometimes the secrets to plants are in plain sight, but we don't always realize it. So weeping willow, I always thought was called that because of the shape of the branches. But then as I sat with willow, I had a really deeply life-changing grief experience when my brother died suddenly in 2011. And if anybody's ever had that experience of a sudden death, where I call it, you're in the abyss of grief. It's just like it's very hard to stay in this world, basically. And so willow just really came forward as a good ally for me and said, I can help hold that grief for you so that it could get turned down to a manageable amount. And so I worked with willow for a long time, just helping to come back to the world of the living.
Well, also because you do essence remedies, you mentioned. So that's another whole use of plants, and certainly linked to the energetic aspects of plants. So when we think about willow, I think anyone can think about willow as versus, let's say, oak. So willow is something that bends in the wind and that gives and that's changeable versus something like oak. Like, how would you match someone with which of those they may need, not in terms of medicinal components, but in terms of energetic components, such as in an essence remedy?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And it's something that often gets missed when people first discover about essences, because we're so used to thinking about medicine, like particularly allopathic medicine, right? It's like, I have a headache, so I take an aspirin. I have indigestion, so I take Tums. And it's like, whatever, we're just trying to suppress the symptom or relieve the symptom. And in flower essences, it's totally different. So I would get calls from somebody saying, I have a headache. What essence would you recommend? I'm like, no, we don't work that way. It's more about why, what's going on with the headache. And so, you know, some people it's tension. So we might need to give them an essence that's more calming and soothing. Some people it's they're tired, or sometimes it's trauma. So, yeah, with willow, it's more, you know, there's not even a clear cut thing, because I'm like, the essences for me, I even take it a little bit further. It's just like, who's really showing up for this person? So for oak, I normally work with people who are needing to feel grounded and safe. There's a particular oak essence I work with called black oak, and it just feels like loving grandfather energy. So if they're having root chakra issues, we'll often bring that in.
Wait a minute.
Sorry.
You and I know what that word means, but we never know who's listening on the radio.
Right,
so
right.
What does root chakra mean?
So root chakra, you know, our chakras are energy centers in our body. And so the root chakra is at the base of your spine and extends down into the earth. So it's the function of this is to help us feel connected to the earth, to be fully embodied, so present in our body, feeling safe, secure. So when we have trauma, that root gets cut off, and it makes it really difficult for us to feel safe. It makes it difficult for us to be fully in our body. And it's also tiring, because we're not getting the energy from the earth that we should be getting. And it's, you know, in our culture, it's pretty prevalent to have root chakra issues, because let's face it, there's lots of trauma around. So that's why I would bring in black oak, particularly because there's, you know, I always say when there's a need, nature provides an abundance of solutions. And so there's so many plants that can and essences that can help with the root chakra. But black oak in particularly is for those people who really just need to feel held and safe and secure.
So if you wanted to match using a black oak essence, which is very different from an herbal extract,
right,
would you prepare it yourself, or is there a line of essence remedies that includes that differentiation with black oak?
I do prepare them myself. Black oak is an essence that I made, so I give it both in dosage form to my clients, but I also sell it. I'm not actually sure that one's listed on my website, but most people there, I have a number of customers who know I have it, so they just contact me for it. So I do sell it as a stock. So essences are work on a dilution factor. So if you're buying an essence in the store, you would be buying the stock level, which we usually don't take at that level. Like, you might do a drop if you want to do a journey, or you're working on something physical, but normally we dilute it down to what's called a dosage level. And that's what you get when you go see a flower essence practitioner. And usually when I'm working with essences, I very rarely give just one essence to a client. It's usually in a blend. So we have this synergy going on with the plants. But it is always nice when you can work with an essence all in itself, because then you can really see how this essence affects you.
Essence remedies are amazing. They're not the same as an herbal extract, which has actual molecules that interact. It's something that's shifting on a much more energetic communication level, and you never know how it's going to go. I know that some clients that I've had who we talk about using essence remedies. Let's say, I'll give an example. Someone was very unhappy at work, but she couldn't leave her job because she was there many, many years. And there were things like a few more years and then you get a retirement, you know, which is a practical matter that you can't always just shift your life. So she was so unhappy. We were doing essence remedies and we talked about that we could actually figure out why she wasn't happy was because where her desk was all the way in the back of a room in an old building and there were no windows. So, you know, we couldn't break a window or anything, but somehow after giving her the essences, she came back about 2 months later, and things like this are not unusual. And I said, so how are things going at work? She said, it's great. They were going to do construction in that area, so they moved me to a new room, and now I'm right by a window. And I have found things like that, just openings happen all the time.
Yeah, often when people talk about flower essences, or I call mine spirit essences, they always talk about them being subtle. And I try to give this caveat. I'm like, you know, yes, they can be subtle, but they can also be like really big life changers. So yes, it is a matter of, you know, they affect us. We know that, right? If we're changing, then the world around us starts to change as well. So they can affect what's happening in our life circumstances as well.
Right. And you can't do a scientific study that it's because of the essence remedies. Right. But, you know, I've been doing that actually with clients for over 50 years. So you just get to see these patterns that are just amazing. Well, we're going to take another little short break here, Jen. And I want to remind our listeners, our guest today is Jen Frey. That's F-R-E-Y. We're talking about her beautiful book, Communicating with Plants, Heart-Based Practices for Connecting with Plant Spirits. And her website is bridgetsway.com. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I totally agree. And that's one of the interesting things when people who are strictly vegan are feeling they're that way because they don't want to eat something with a face or intelligence. I'm not saying they shouldn't be vegan. That could be your choice. I actually, from a health perspective, do not think that that's a good choice, but that's a topic for another day. But being someone who has raised my own animals to eat them, when my animals were born, of course, they were brought in lovingly. I'm not talking about a factory farm. A factory farming methods are deleterious to both plants and animals and humans and the earth. That's a really negative practice. But that does not have to do with us becoming part of the web of life. And when my animals were born, whether they were chicken coming out of an egg or a little baby goat being born that I helped to midwife, and I also was a midwife for human babies. I delivered over 200 of them. And all of that is actually connected. And when those baby animals were born, I would greet them and say, we're going to have a wonderful time together, and then you will become part of us, meaning me and my family. And I meant that in a molecular way, the same as my plant babies. So, you know, once you get that deeper perspective of how the intelligence of plants, it really broadens that, you know, food relationship with all different kinds of things.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that you brought up that part about factory farming, because as a plant lover, it's actually a thing that really irritates me about this, because So the area that I live in, we can get really great food. We have more organic farms in my county than we do in the rest of the state. So there's great food all around. And there's lots of people who have recognized that animals need to be raised humanely. And that means like connected to the wild, not just in a building that has a door open that they can go out if they want to, but really with love and reverence. And so that's the meat that we eat ourselves. But very rarely do we find vegetable farms that treat plants the same way, that recognize that plants also need to be raised with love and respect and reverence. And again, you know, my grandfather taught us that you sing to them, you pray to them, you have music playing for them, you ask permission. And that's very rarely done on vegetable or fruit farms.
Well, that's a beautiful thought. So with that, tell us how people can find your book and you, Jen.
Yeah, the easiest way is my website, bridgetsway.com. I'm, of course, also on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, but you can find all the links on my website. You can find the book there. You can find lots of articles and resources and class information and my email. So always feel free to send me an email.
And there's links also to, if you did want to go to the Facebook, which is Bridget's Way Plants, or Instagram, Bridget's Way. So you're definitely out there, and your book is absolutely exquisite. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you, Ellen.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. Go ahead and visit naturalnurse.com. Go to classes and workshops to see what's coming up. Go to the very bottom of the front page to add your email if you'd like a little notice now and then about what we're up to. And we're so happy that you joined us for today's show. And for, you know, we have many, many shows there for you to listen to on the archive. So with that, and on behalf of myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we just realized we've been officially partners for over 40 years. I don't know how that happened, but but it's been a fun ride all the way. So until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.